Okay, we begin here on the top of Yudalad Amud Aleph, six lines down. The Gemara here is discussing the machloket that we had yesterday between Rav Chista and Rabbi Elazar. Rav Chista says that a chatzer shutafin chayav bal hashem bal regel. When you have a chatzer that is jointly owned by two parties, then you're still chayav al shein v'regel in that instance. Whereas Rabbi Elazar believes that you are patur al shein bal regel, that you're not chayav in that instance for shein v'regel. And then the Gemara went on to discuss how they fit into our Mishnah. And then the Gemara went on to discuss a Braita about the Shomrim. In that Braita discussed a Shoel. And what was the exact scenario in which he was Chayav. So the Gemara's conclusion is, V'achum ha'izkinan, shekibel alav shmirot gufo, v'lo kibel alav shmirat nizakav. The case where he accepted upon himself the responsibility that the animal that he borrowed will not get damaged at all. But he did not accept upon himself the responsibility if the animal goes out and does damage. And therefore, when that animal damages the Shoel's own Shvarim, then the Mash'il is responsible for that, even though it's sitting with the Shoel. Because he didn't accept responsibility for that. Tosafot over here says, of course, what's the question? The question might be that in that instance, you would assume, yes, he accepted responsibility for the animal not getting damaged. He did not accept responsibility for going out and damaging, but with regards to his own property, you would assume maybe he did accept that responsibility, that he's going to take care of it within his own property, that it doesn't do damage to his own property. Kamash Malan is that it's not that way. Similarly, it's a machloka d'Rambam and Ravid, what's the default status over here? But the default status is that you only accept responsibility for the well-being of the animal, not for it doing damage, or whether the default is that you accept both, and here's a case where they made a specific t'nai to unwind it. And then the Gemara goes on to discuss the latter half of the Braita, which says that if it broke out at night, or Pertzu Alustim, that it's Patur, implying that during the day it's Chayav. Why would you be Chayav during the day? So the Gemara answers in the end, no, even if he accepts responsibility for the damage, there are certain things, even for a Shoel, which are beyond his control. He's done everything that he could to protect the animal. And even though generally a shoel is chayav and onsin, that's onsin with regards to damage to the animal. No matter what happens to the animal, he is responsible. But if the animal goes out and does damage in a circumstance which is way out of his control, he will be patur. That's what we ended off with. So Gemara says, Ini, is that really true? Va'atani Rav Yosef. Chatzera shutafim va'pundak chayav ben ala shein vela regel. So here we have a question seemingly on Rabbi Elazar, which is that we have a chatzer of partners and a pundak. A pundak is a motel. It's a bed and breakfast, but it's more extensive in the fact that these are people who are traveling for business. And so not only do you rent the room, but you also rent space for your merchandise and you bring it into this area. So this is an area that is shared by all of the parties that rent the room there. As Rashi notes over here, that's why it's not called the Rishut Rabim, is because not everybody has permission to be in there. Not everyone has permission to utilize it. Only those people renting space there have the right to use it. So these are areas that are Chatzer HaShutafim, and Pundak is just a larger partnership of people. Chaya ben ala shein v'aregel. So here it seems almost explicitly like Rav Chista, that in that instance you are Chayab for shein and regel. To Yufta de Rabbi Elazar. This seems like a very strong refutation of the position of Rabbi Elazar, who says you're patur. Amalecha Rabbi Elazar, betizbara, matnita milo plige. Wait a minute. What are you coming to me with this type of question for? Yes, that braita is definitely problematic for me. But on the other hand, there are other braitot that support my position. So yes, if it's a machloket in the braitot, a machloket tanaim, I can align with one tana. And Rav Chista can align with the Tana of the Braita that Rav Yosef is bringing. So yes, I can't fit into this particular Braita, but there are other Braita that support me. Why should I be worried about this Braita? Vatanya. Arba'a klalot hayal Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He used to say these four principles, or these four principal areas, we'll call them, in Nizakim. Kol she'u reshut l'nizak v'lo l'mazik chayav bekol. Anywhere where the injured party has permission to be there, and the damaging party does not have the permission to be there, he's chayav hakol. He's responsible for everything that happens, because he's not supposed to be there. And since he's not supposed to be there, and he's causing damage, he's going to be responsible for all the damage that he does. Dimazik, in an area which is the purview of the one who's doing the damage, Feloni Nizak, and not the party that is being damaged, Patur Miko, there you are exempt from any payment, because you can say to the injured party, what were you doing there? You had no permission to be there, and therefore he's exempt from any responsibility. Lazeh ulazeh, if it's an area that is jointly owned by them, kagon chatzer ha-shutafim ba-bika, like a partnership area or an area that is utilized by a large number of people, patur ba'al ha-shein ve'al ha-regel, there you are exempt from the dinim of shein ve'regel, ve'al ha-nigicha, ve'al ha-nigifa, ve'al ha-nishicha, ve'al ha-revitza, ve'al ha-bi'ita, al ha-nigicha is karen, that is goring, and all of its subsets, which are nigifa is bumping with its body, nishicha is biting, revitza is sitting down on it, bi'ita is kicking it, but all these with intent to do damage, therefore they are a toladav karen. Tam mishalem chatzi nezek, muad mishalem nezek shalem. And since they are karen, if it's a tam, it pays half, and if it is a muad, it pays full. Lo laze v'lo laze, if you have an area that belongs to neither of them, kagon chatzer she'eno shel shnehem, like an area that belongs to neither of them, chayav bo ala shein v'ala regel, there you are chayav for shein and regel, ala nigicha, v'ala nishicha, v'ala nigifa, v'ala revia, v'ala bi'ita, that is karen. For karen, tam mishalem chatzi nezek, muad mishalem nezek shalem. So these are four different areas that the damage can take place in, and each place has its own rules. Again, when it's the property of the nizak and not the mazik is fully responsible for anything that happens there. If it's the property of the mazik and not the nizak, then he's not responsible for anything that happens over there. The two latter ones are the cases where there's different dinim, depends on who has rights. If they both have rights to be there, we say that he is patur ala shein v'ala regel and chayav ala karen. If neither of them have permission to be there, then he's chayav and shein regel and chayav ala karen. So that's supportive of Rabbi Elazar. Te'ani mihat. So here you see that they have a braita that's supportive of Rabbi Elazar's position that says when you have chatzer shutafin, then you are patur alashein vela regel, exactly what Rabbi Elazar's opinion is. So Rabbi Elazar says, yeah, I won't fit into the braita of Yosef, but I can fit into this braita, no problem. So machloket a braita? Yes, but I have a tana that supports my position. But now the Gemara separately has to deal with the fact that kashia ahadodi, these two braitot are soter achadat hasheni. So you could answer machloket tanaim, but the Gemara always prefers to reconcile and say that there aren't those types of differences. Kitanya hi v'chatzer miyuchadet lazeh ulazeh ben leperot ben leshvarim. That the case where we say that you are patur is in a case where it's a chatzer miyuchadet lazeh lazeh. It's some place that belongs to both of them for all types of usage. That means whether it's peirot, whether it's shvarim, you have the right to put your animals, your peirot there. Hay de Rabbi Yosef, the case of the bright of Rabbi Yosef is a case, b'chatzer miyuchedet peirot, ve'enu miyuchedet shvarim. It's a place where you can utilize it for peirot, but you cannot utilize it for shvarim. Meaning that you have permission to bring your fruits in there, you do not have permission to bring your animals in here. So the question between the braitot is what makes it a joint ownership over here? What rights of joint ownership do you have? In the second braita, you have full rights of joint ownership. That means I have permission to bring my animals in, I have permission to bring my peirot in. On the other hand, the case of Rabbi Yosef, the braita of Rabbi Yosef, is a case where you have permission to bring in your peirot, that's what brings in joint ownership, but you do not have permission to bring in your shor. Dilagabe shein, habilah chatzera nizak. For shein, that's considered to be chatzera nizak, because you only have rights to bring your peirot in here. Since you have rights to bring your peirot in, it's called chatzera nizak, because when the shor comes in, the shor has no right to be there. So as far as your peirot being there, it's your location. If it's your location and a shor comes in and damages it, then they're chayav for shein. That's ubier bistei acher. It went into another field and did damage. Okay. The owner of the shore also has rights to put his peirot there, but he doesn't have rights to put his shore there. So when his shore enters and does damage, as far as his shore is concerned, this is bi'er b'stei acher. He went into somebody else's field and ate their fruits. Dekanami, I can show you that there's a difference between these braitot. The Tani Ocha Dumya de Pundak. In our case, the case of Rabbi Yosef's Breita, it said it's a Chatzera Shutafim and a Pundak. Those were the two areas that it paralleled. Biktani Hotam, in the second Breita, it says Dumya de Bika. A Chatzera Shutafim and a Bika. Shmamina, that there's a difference between the Chatzera Shutafim in the first Breita versus that in the second Breita. A Pundak is an area where business people travel and they're moving with their merchandise. Since they're moving with their merchandise, that is a location where you have a right to bring in your merchandise. You do not have a right to bring in your animals because people are afraid of their merchandise getting ruined. And so therefore the Pundak, in paralleling to a Chatzer Shutafim, is a Chatzer Shutafim where the parties have rights to bring in their peirot. They do not have rights to bring in their shvarim. So as far as your peirot are concerned, you have a right to bring them there. This is your Chatzer as far as the peirot are concerned. The shore comes in and damages, even though it's a shore of someone who also has rights to put peirot there, but as far as the shore, the perspective of the shore vis-a-vis your fruits, that's who pi'er b'steacher, and that's why the Breita of Rabbi Yosef says, or chayav in shein in regel. On the other hand, the other Breita that we brought down, of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, there it says the chatzer shutafim is like a bika. A bika is like a big open valley area where there are lots of fields. There, people bring in their peirot and bring in their animals. It's an area where it's free for usage. People bring in their animals to graze. People bring in them there too. Put them in their corrals. And they also have fruits there. So that's a chatzer shutafim where you have rights to both bring in your peirot and your shvarim. There you can't call it ubi'er b'steacher because the shore has a right to be there and the peirot have a right to be there. It looks much more like reshut harabim than it does like a chatzer of the nizak. And because of that, you will be patur. So in doing so, the Gemara now reconciles between the braitot and says that there are different types of partnerships or areas of partnerships, and the nature of the partnership will determine whether Shein V'Regel is Chayav or Shein V'Regel is Patur. It really depends on how much this is called Steacher. If the Pasuk tells you you have to be Bivir B'Steacher, how do you define Steacher? In its simplest form, Steacher is the field of the Nizak. So how can it be the field of the Nizak, and in essence not at that of the Mazik? So that's the circumstance in which he has permission for the peirot, not the shvarim. But in the case where he has permission for peirot and shvarim, yes, it's the chatzer and nizak, but it's also the chatzer amazik, and therefore it's not called ubi'er b'stei acher, and that's why you'd be patur for shein regel in that instance. Matkivla Rabbi Zever, kevin yubi'ched of the peirot, ha be'inan ubi'er b'stei acher v'leka. So Rabbi Zever says, wait a minute, you need bi'er b'stei acher. And since both parties here have the right to put in their peirot, that means that both the Nizak and the Mazik have rights in this property. You can't call it Steacher, that it's the Sadeh of the Nizak, when the Mazik has equal rights there. If that's the case, how do you say that you're in violation of Bi'er B'Steacher? Amar Le Abaye, Abaye answers, Kevin Deinam Yuchad Shvarim, Steacher Karin and Bay. Since it's not designated for the rights of a shore to enter there, it's called a Steacher. It's called a different field. Because as far as looking at the shore, or from the shore's perspective, he doesn't have a right to be there. So when he enters, he's entering into a steacher. He's entering into another party's field, into the Nizak's field. And therefore, he is culpable in that case, because it's shein and regel, the steacher, in the field of the Nizak. Amalei Ravacha midifti the Ravina, lema midinat nita lo plige. Well, now let us say, since we were able to find a reconciliation between the braitot, Amorai namin lo plige. Maybe the Amoraim themselves also do not argue over here. Because you found a way, when one says chayav and one says patur by shein v'regel, that you found a way to reconcile it, even though it was chatzer ha-shutafim in both cases. Let us say the same thing in regards to Rabbi Elazar and Rav Chista. Let's say that they agree. They're just talking about different types of chatzer ha-shutafim. Amorai, in. You're right. That is the case. We could reconcile the Amoraim in this way, and they're not arguing on each other. Vimtim salom ar plige, and even if you think they are arguing over here, bekushya the Rabbi Zera upiruka da Abaye plige. They're arguing in this difference that Rabbi Zera and Abaye had as to whether it's called steacher or not steacher. So what the Gemara here now did was narrow the machloka between Rabbi Elazar and Rav Chista significantly. First of all, it says maybe there's no machloka at all. And Rabbi Elazar, who says patur, is in a case where you have chatzer shutafin that belongs to both of them for all utility. That means both for peirot and shvarim, and that's why he says you're patur for shein v'regel. On the other hand, Rav Chista, who says Rechayav, is talking about a Chatzer Shutafin, where they have permission to use it for Perot, but they don't have permission to use it for Shvarim, and that's why you're Chayav for Shein Regel, because it's called Bi'er B'Steacher. Or, we say that both of them are speaking about that case, a case where you have permission for Perot, no permission for Shvarim, and they're arguing whether that's called Bi'er B'Steacher. Is that called another field in that case? Whether you're chayav for shein because it's called bi'er b'steacher, or you're patur mishein because it's not called bi'er b'steacher, and that was the machloket or the difference between Rabbi Zeira and Abaye as to whether it's called steacher. So now the achronim over here discuss what is exactly, what is the fundamental machloket between the position of Rabbi Zeira and Abaye. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman suggests that the difference is how you view u'bi'er b'steacher. What is the bi'er? What is the focus of the damage that is being done here? Is it the item that is doing the damage? Or is it the item being damaged? Which one is the focus of the steacher? According to Abaye, it says that the bi'er b'steacher is focused on the activity, the damage being done. And therefore, as long as the peirot have permission to be there and the shvarim do not have permission to be there, the shor is the one doing the damage. As far as the shor is concerned, that is called u'bi'er b'steacher, because the damaging party has no right to be there, and therefore it's bi'er b'steacher. On the other hand, Rabbi Zeira believes that you focus on the object being damaged. Here, the object being damaged is the peirot. As far as the peirot are concerned, right, that's in a chatzer hashutafin. It's in a place where both parties have permission to put their peirot over there. So if you look at the peirot themselves, that's an area of joint ownership, an area where the mazik also has rights. And therefore it's not called u'bi'er b'steacher. So that's how Rabbi Chanan Wasserman explains the machloket over here, is when we say the bi'er, that activity, is it focused on the object of the bi'er, or is it focused on the bo'er, the one who's doing the damage? Depending on which item you focus on, that will tell us whether it's steacher or not. That'll be the machloket between Rabbi Zeira and Abaye. Rav Soloveitchik gives a different explanation, which goes back to what we discussed earlier already in the perek, is why are you patur by Shein V'Regel and Reshut Rabim? What is the patur for Shein and Regel? We saw back there that the Rif says the reason you're patur for Shein V'Regel is because it's Derech Chulucha. You have permission to be there. The fact that you have permission to be there means that there's an expectation of a certain amount of, we'll call it collateral damage, that happens because when animals walk, they do damage. When they go through places, they're going to eat the food that is there. Since you have permission to be there, you're patur on Shein and Regel because of the fact that it's normal. And those are the activities that you're permitted to do. On the other hand, the Rosh, who brings down this Riv, disagreed and says that he thought that it was a gzera takatuf, u'bi'er b'steacher. And that might explain the machloket here between Abaye and Rabbi Zeira. Abaye says that you are chayav here is because you don't have a right to enter into this area. Since you don't have a right to bring your shore into this area, you do not have the tour of Shein B'Reshut HaRabim, or you do not have the tour like the Rif says, which is when you have permission to be there, you have an exemption for Shein and Regel. You don't have permission to be there, you don't have an exemption for Shein and Regel. So Abaye says, your shore doesn't have a right to be there. Your shore doesn't have a right to be there, it's not like Shein and B'Reshut HaRabim, and therefore, you're chayav for the damage done. On the other hand, Rabbi Zeira holds like the Rosh, which is that when it comes to Shein and Regel, there's a Gzeret HaKatuv, u'bi'er b'steacher. And bi'er b'steacher says you're patur, no matter whether you have permission to be there or not. You just have to determine, is it a steacher or not a steacher? And Rabbi Zeira says it's not a steacher over here. Since it's not a steacher, therefore you are patur in this instance, because it's not called u'bi'er b'steacher. So that's first of all the machlok between Abaye and Rabbi Zeira. Those are two views of the Achronim as how to explain the nature of that machloket. Gufa, the Gemara comes back now and wants to discuss this braita that it brought from Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. It says, Arba klalot haya Rabbi Shimon Elazar omer ben Izakin. There were four principles that he had in Izakin. Kosho reshut nizak velo lemazik. Anywhere we have permission for the nizak, the injured party to be, but not the damager. Chayav bakol. You are chayav for everything that goes on. The Gemara here notes that it's a unusual language or strange language that the Braita uses and says, chayav bakol, ala kol loktani. Doesn't say you are chayav on everything that happens, which would be in the natural or easier language to use. Ala chayav bakol. What does it mean that you're chayav in everything? Why are you chayav in everything? Bikule nezek means that in any form of nezek, you are completely culpable over here. Mani, who's the author of that position? Now, the only one or only nezek that that will make a difference for is Karen, which is that if you say that you're chayav bikul, you're completely on the hook for all damage that is done. For any other damage, whether it's bor, shein v'regel, all of those, you always are muad mitchila and you're chayav right away. Karen has a difference between in the beginning where you're chayav chetzi nezek and when you're a muad and you're nezek shalim. So if you say you're chayav bekol, you're chayav for everything up front immediately, that is the shita of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfoni, damar mishune Karen b'chatzer anizak, nezek shalim mishalim. The Rabbi Tarfon believes that the tam and muad, or the distinction between tam and muad, is only applicable when you are in the reshut harabim, not when you're in the chatzer nizak, not when you're in the property of the nizak. When you're in the property of nizak, you are culpable from day one for all the damage that is done. So what the Gemara is saying now is that that first part of the braita that says, instead of saying chayav al hakol, that you're chayav in every instance, rather it says that chayav bikol means you're chayav in everything, for everything, means that it's telling you that you're mu'ad in every case and you pay full damages in all cases. That means that the author of that position is clearly Rabbi Tarfon, who we're going to see later on in the next couple of days. We'll bump into Rabbi Tarfon. Because Rabbi Tarfon believes that if the damage of Karen happens in the chatzer nizak, in the injured party's property, then you pay mu'ad mitchila, you pay nezek shalem mitchila. Eim seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of the braita? It says, lo lezeh velo lezeh. You have a property that belongs to neither of them. Kagon, what's an example of that? Chatzer sheinu shel shneihem. A chatzer belongs to neither of them. Chayav bala shein bala regel. There you are culpable for shein and regel. My lo lezeh velo lezeh. What does it mean that neither of them have rights in this property? Ilema lo lezeh velo lezeh klal. If you're telling me that means literally they have no ownership here whatsoever, ela dacher, it belongs to a third party. Vabinan ubir b'stei acher. Veleka. Don't we need the damage of shein and regel to be done b'stei acher? Stei acher means in the property of the nizak, of the injured party. That only when the mazik does damage to the nizak in his property, are you chayav? So over here, you have a failure in bier b'stei acher, because this is a third party's property. Acher doesn't mean anyone else. It means the injured party. Your animal goes into the injured party's property and does damage there. That's where you're culpable. If he goes into a third party's property and eats someone else's fruits, he'd be patur. So if you have your fruits in your friend's property and the animal goes in there and eats it, then you will not be culpable. Now, the truth is, if you are renting the space or borrowing the space and you put your fruits there, then it will be considered bier b'stei acher. We don't need you to have literal ownership over the property. We just have to have you have explicit rights to utilize the property. Over here, it's lo lezeh lo lezeh, means neither of them has rights there. When you put your payroll down in someone else's property and then the shore goes in and eats them, that's not bier b'stei acher, because it's a third party's property. El apshita, lo lezeh v'lo lezeh, el adechad. It doesn't belong to both of them, el adechad, but to one of them. V'ktani seifa, and in that seifa it writes, tam mishalem chatzi nezek, umwad mishalem nezek shalem. That's where the braita suggests to have a difference between shein and regel. Over there it doesn't say you're chayav for everything across the board. It says shein and regel you're chayav, but by tam and by keren you're chayav only chatzi nezek for tam and full nezek, when it's a mu'ad. So atan rabbonon, that follows the position of the rabbonon. Damrei mishuneh keren b'chatzer nizak, chatzi nezek ud mishalem. Mishuneh, by the way, Rashi notes over here, all keren is mishuneh. That's the definition of keren, is that it's an unusual behavior of the shor. So here when the Gemara says mishuneh keren, just like it did by Rabbi Tarfon, it's because it's giving you the definition of keren. Keren is always mishuneh. But it's mishuneh b'chatzer nizak. There, you pay chatzi nezek. I mean, the Chachamim believe that tam and muad has application not only in Rishut Rabim, but even in the chatzer nizak, that same distinction still remains. So, originally we thought it said, lo lezeh, lo lezeh. Neither of them had permission. That's why the Gemara was questioning it. So the Gemara has to conclude that it's not right. That it must be that it doesn't belong to this one and not to that one. El alachad. But it really does belong to one. One of them has permission to put their fruits there. And that's why it becomes chatzer nizak. Comes chatzer nizak, or the sadeh of the nizak, because he does have permission to put it there. So that's why you're chayav v'shein regel. That's what the Gemara answered, why you are chayav v'shein regel. But then it says Karen has a difference between tam and muad. That's different than the beginning of the braita, where we said that there's no distinction between tam and muad in the chatzer nizak. Gemara says, Reisha Rabbi Tarfon v'Sefer Rabbanan. You've now set up the Braita with two authors. You have a first part of the Braita which seemingly indicates that Chatzer Nizak, there's no difference between Tam and Muad for Karen. And then you have a latter half of the Braita where you're saying that there is a distinction between Tam and Muad for the Chatzer Nizak. So Gemara says, in Tamar Le Shmuel the Rav Yehuda, because Shmuel tells Rav Yehuda, Shinana. So again, here are different interpretations of Shinana. Shinana on the more positive side means sharp one, one who is erudite. On the other hand, there was possibility the Gonim bring, many Gonim bring, that Shinana when someone with big teeth was called Shinana. It's called a big tooth. And that was a nickname where many times in their day, there were features or character traits of an individual were the way to identify them. Remember, they don't have surnames. And you're dealing with a name that might be common. There are plenty of Yehudas out there. So he called him Yehuda Shinana. Then you know that that's speaking to that particular Rav Yehuda. Shavuk Matnitin. Don't worry about the Braita. The Taba try. And follow me. I mean, don't try to figure out what's going on in this Braita because it's problematic. Follow me because Reisha Rabbi Tarfon is Sefer Rabbonan. The Reisha is Rabbi Tarfon. The Sefer is the Rabbonan. And that's the way you reconcile this Braita, by saying that there's dual authorship of the Braita. And that is the solution. So in Ochanami, Shmuel acknowledges that there's a problem in this Braita, and therefore he says that there's dual authorship to deal with that problem in the Braita. Ravina mishmei de Rava amar kula Rabbi Tarfoni. Ravina doesn't like giving dual authorship. This is a machloket that we've seen before, which is what do you prefer? Do you prefer to assume that a Tanaic work has dual authorship and is simpler to explain? Or would you rather have singular authorship with a more difficult explanation? So here you see that difference popping up. Shmuel says, I'm okay with dual authorship, as long as that then makes sense in the Braita. Ravina comes along and says, why would you have information pulled together in a single grouping unless there was a single authorship? So therefore, it must be single authorship, which is Kula Rabbi Tarfoni. My lo lezeh velo lezeh. What does it mean that they both don't have permission to be there in that latter part of the Braita? Lo lezeh v'lo lezeh leperot. For perot, they both do not have permission. Ela dechad. One of them has permission to put their perot there. Lezeh u'lezeh lishvarim. Both of them have permission to put their shvarim in there. To the gabe shein havyele chatzer hanizak. For shein, it's called chatzer hanizak because he's the only one who has the right to put perot there. Since he has a right to put his perot there, it's the chatzer hanizak, the gabe the perot. The gabe karen havyele reshuta rabim. By Karen, it's Rishut Rabim because they both have permission to put their Shvarim there. So as far as the Shur doing damage, B'derech Karen, it's not the Chazer and Izak, because as far as the Shvarim are concerned, they both have permission to have their Shvarim over there, and therefore it becomes like a Rishut Rabim for the Shvarim. That is the Girsa of Rashi. You can see here that the Balei HaTosafot bring the Rabbeinu Tam, who does not like this Girsa at all, because he says, once you have permission to put your shor there, you can't hold them culpable for eating the perot. This is along the lines of what we said before in the Rif, which is, if you have your permission for your shor to be there, you can expect the fact that these perot will be eaten. Or the person who put the perot there must take precautions knowing that he has permission to put his shor there. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam is unwilling to accept this girsa. He says, Rabbeinu Tam garis, lo lezeh, v'lo lezeh l'shvarim. His girsa was that one of them has permission to put in the perot, but as far as the shvarim are concerned, neither of them has permission to put in their shvarim over there. The lo garsin and kamosha katub shvarim, and he's unwilling to accept the girsa of Rashi. The lezev lezev shvarim tim kein gabi shein lo ayelo lechashev chatzer anizak. Because if he has permission to put his shore in there, then his shore eating is not eating in someone else's field. He has permission to put his shore there. Again, that might go back. This machlok, it might revolve around the same machlok before as what is the p'tur of shein? What is the driving force of the p'tur of shein? For the Rabbeinu Tam, the driving force is your permissibility of having your shor there. If you have permission to have your shor there, you're p'tur mishein. On the other hand, it could be that Rashi believes that that's not what makes you p'tur mishein rego. Ubi'er b'stei acher is what makes it. And over here, you're the only one with the right to put your perot there. Since you have a right to put your perot there, therefore it's called ubi'er b'stei acher. And that might be the machloket between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam to explain why they think the girsa oath should be different or why the girsa needs to be changed. Gemara continues and says, wait a minute. According to Ravina's answer, that it's all Rabbi Tarfon, Arba'ah, you're saying there are four here? Shlosha Havu. There are really only three. So now, the truth is that this question should be on Shmuel as well, which is that the fact that Shmuel says here that there's dual authorship, two of the cases in the Braita are the same case with a different outcome. Meaning that both of them are Chatzer and Nizak. One of them is according to Rabbi Tarfa, one of them is according to the Rabbonan. See, even according to Shmuel, this is, or seemingly is a question, yet the Gemara is only posing it to Ravina. So the Balei Tosafot over here say, Bishlam al Shmuel, for Shmuel it's not a problem. The Muki Reisha Rabbi Tarfa from the Sefer Rabbonan, Itzrich Seifa, Lashmeinu Lafuke Mi Rabbi Tarfa. So yes, it may not be that there are four different locations, but there are four different halachot that appear in this Braita. And therefore, the number four could be significant or meaningful in this case. But for Ravina, who now creates two cases that are basically identical, or that final case where you have permission to put your peirot, and the both parties have permission to put in their shvarim, you basically have combined two of the previous cases. You combine the case of Reshut Ravim, which is a place where everybody has permission, and you can play at a place where only the Chatzer and Nizak. So you've brought back two cases that you've already spoken about before. So that's what the Gemara's question is. Yochi arba shlosha avu. Amar Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak shlosha klalot ba'arba mikomot. Yes, there are three principles in four locations. Or in essence, what we've done here is saying, yes, there are only three dinim that have really been proposed over here. Those three dinim, now we're going to speak about them in four different locations. And that's what Rashi says over here. Dein karel legimel dinim b'reshut hanizak chayav. B'kol, if you're in the reshut hanizak, you're culpable for everything. B'reshut hamazik, you're patur mikol. B'chatzei reshut tafin, if it's partners, chayav. B'chatzi nezek b'keren u'patur alashen v'aregel. There's all your dinim. Aval arba makomotim. There are four different places. Shein dinan shaveh. Because they do not have the same din. Deish chatzei reshut tafin shu chayav ba. Alashen. And the payroll, and there is a chatzer shutafim where he is patur on those things. So here you have one location has two different possibilities about what can happen here. There's a chatzer shutafim where you'll be patur, and there'll be a chatzer shutafim where you'll be chayav and shein viregel. And so yes, in the end, that is the same din. One din is it's steacher, one din it's not steacher. But the fact that it manifests in the same location differently, therefore, they separate it into four principles, even though there are only three dinim that come out of the Mishnah. You just have to tell me whether Chatzer Shutafin is Reshut Rabim, or is Chatzer Shutafin Steacher. And that's the fourth case, which is one Chatzer Shutafin is Reshut Rabim and Patur for Shein Regel, and one Chatzer Shutafin is Chatzer Nizak, which is Chayav in Shein Regel. It's even more fine a distinction, because you're right, it's not really that there are three dinim in four locations. There's three dinim in three locations, but one of those locations can have a din this way sometimes and a din that way in other times. Right now, the Gemara moves on. We move on to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is completely cryptic. We'll read it. And then the Gemara is going to go piece by piece through the Mishnah to try and understand what the Mishnah means. Shum kesef, shvei kesef, bifnei beitin, v'al piedim, b'nei chorin, b'nei brit, v'anashim, bichlal, anezek, v'anizak, v'amazik, v'tashlumim. Here you have a Mishnah that just basically makes states terms and doesn't really give you any definition or reference to what the terms are speaking about. Seemingly, they're referencing back to the two previous Mishnayot, which are the nezek that is done in these two previous Mishnayot. These are the qualifications for that nezek. Samar says, my shum kesef. What does it mean that you have to make an assessment, a monetary assessment of the damage? I'm reviewed that. Shum ze lo yehei ela bikesef. This assessment must be done at a monetary level. Tanina la'ad etanu rabbanan. Here we have a Mishnah supporting what we know from a Braita. Para she zika talit. The talit she zika para. A para did damage to clothing, and the clothing did damage to the para. In omrim teitzei para bitalit vitalit bepara. We don't say, wait, you just swap the two items, or the damages are offsetting, and therefore we don't have to worry about it. El shamino tabidamim. You have to assess the damage done to each one of the two items, and then afterwards you can discuss about the offsetting nature of the damage that is done. Now, what the case here is not clear. The Balei Tosafot quote a Rashi, which our Rashi here does not seemingly say, but quote a Rashi that says that this happened in the same time, that the para damaged the talit while the talit was damaging the para. So they got had a little altercation between them, and therefore they both ended up in damage. The problem with that is that the animal damaging the talit is the din of keren, or regel. The talit damaging the animal is a din of bor. And bor is only applicable bir shuta rabim. So now you have to have the bor bir shuta rabim. On the other hand, when you're talking about the damage of regel, that's patur b'shut rabim. Or if you're speaking about the damage of keren in b'shut rabim, that is not chayav when it's both mishuneh, when they both did the wrong thing. Meaning that it's keren, you're chayav in b'shut rabim, where your animal acted out of character, and the other person was doing something that he was permitted to do in b'shut rabim. But if the other party did something wrong in the Reshut Rabim, like he put his talit in the middle of Reshut Rabim, and then your animal goes and damages it by Karen, you're not going to be chayav. So the case of Karen must be be chatzer ha nizak. So how do you have a case where you have the talit and the parah doing damage and both being chayavim? Because the talit's only going to be chayav in Reshut Rabim, the Karen's only going to be chayav in the chatzer ha nizak. So you can't have a case where they overlap. For that reason, the Balei Tosafot separate the cases and say these are totally independent cases. Not saying that it happens simultaneously. It's telling you about two cases. One case where a parah damaged a talit. Okay, that's in the Chatzer HaNizak. Another case where a talit damaged a parah. That's in the Reshut HaRabim. They're not interlocking or interwoven cases. They're simply two different examples. It's or. It's not that this case happened all at once. It's this case or this other case took place. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. Now, once you do that, what does it mean, lo teitzei parah b'talit? So in the case where you say that it all happened simultaneously, you might just say, let's call it a day. We both got damaged, let's call it a day. And Braita and the Mishnah are saying, you can't do that because you have to assess the damage independently. You can't even assess the differential in damage. You have to independently assess the talit, independently assess the parah, and then you want to offset, that's fine. But you have to independently assess them. According to the explanation, it's all one big case. I understand what the hava would mean, it would have been maybe to offset. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, where it's a totally separate case, what would you think happens over here? So he says, it's going to teach us not like Rabbi Akiva. There's going to be a machloket that we're going to see later on in the Masechta and Daf Nun as to whether when a Tam does damage, where the gufo is what you're going to pay the damage through, the body of the animal itself. Once the animal does damage, is the body then mishubad to the nizak? The damage that it did, do you now have a lien on that animal? Or how strong a lien do you have on that animal? Rabbi Akiva believes right away, yuchlat. You get rights in that animal because it did damage to you. So what this breita is coming to say is not like Rabbi Akiva. That you do not get rights immediately. Beit Din has to assess the situation, and only then do you get a right of payment, or then do you get a lien on the animal. It does not happen automatically at the time of the damage. And that's what he says, that the halacha is like Rabbi Ishmael, who says, Yusham. You first have to assess the damage. And therefore, that's what's keren. Ubitalit biparah atalishminan. Dologabim minyatne. And the talit to the parah, that's a case of metaltalin. Talit is metaltalin. And so you would have thought you could grab the talit to pay for the money, or for the damage that's done here, to your shore. The answer is you can't, because it might be a talit of yitomim. Yitomim, when they inherit metaltalim from their father, the metaltalim are no longer encumbered to anybody who has a claim against the estate. Only karka is encumbered. So therefore, you can't take the talit, because if it belongs to yitomim, then it's not mishubad to the obligations of the father before he passed away. So that's the chiddush of the braita according to Rabbeinu Tam. But in each of these cases, it's telling you that you don't have a right to collect from this nezek. You have to get an assessment of the damage and then go after the property of the individual. In one case, because you don't automatically get the right to the parah, you have to wait for an assessment before you get that right in the parah. Or in the case of the metaltalin, you have to get an assessment and then go after karka, because you can't go after metaltalin because it belongs to yitomim. So that's the chiddush according to the Rabbeinu Tam. Again, according to the version of Rashi, that it happens simultaneously, we don't say just, let bygones be bygones, and we damaged each other, so let's just walk away. No, you have to assess the damage and figure out who owes whom, or which had more damage done to it. Or, the way Rashi has it now, itolat aparashi zika talito, lote nishomit elenchin chaser hen yoter yitlena. As if there's some sort of penalty over here, that if your talit did damage, that the guy can just confiscate it and take it, no matter whether it's worth more or less than the damage that's done. That would have been the Hava Mina. This guy did something wrong. He put a boar there. you clean up the boar and take it out, and you say, too bad, you shouldn't have left your talit there. The answer is no, you have to assess the real amount of damage that is done. The Nemuka Yosef over here goes out of his way to defend that other version of Rashi, which says that it happened simultaneous, by saying that it happened in a Chatzer HaShutafin. The same case that we just had before, a case where you're going to be Chayav in Keren, as well as Chayav in Bor, in a case where you have some sort of Chatzer HaShutafin that allows both parties to be there. So as far as Bor B'Shut HaRabim is concerned, since both parties have permission to be there, it's deemed to be B'Shut HaRabim. For Karen, since you have permission to be there, it's not Mishuneh. You didn't do something unusual, but the animal did do something unusual, and therefore you'll be culpable for the damage done to the talit. So the Nemuka Yosef comes up with a scenario where you could explain it. Shvei Kesef, it's worth money, or it's money equivalent. Ketan Rabbanan, Shvei Kesef, Melameid, She'im Beitin Nizkakim, Ele Nechasim She'esh Lehen Achrayut. You can own Beitin only deals with property that is a real asset. But if the Nizak went ahead and grabbed Metaltalin, Beitin will take out of that item or will use that item for paid payment. So Beitin itself only goes after real property. It does not go after Metaltalin when it goes to gain payment for this individual. If the individual on a vigilante basis went ahead and took Metaltalin already, then Beitin will address that, or at least deal with it. So, Amamar. Shvei Kesef, Malay Jain Beitin Nizkakim, Ele Nechasim She'eshem Nachariyut. That they only deal with real property. My Mashmo. How do you know that? Amar Rabba Barab Ula, Davar HaShaveh Kol Kesef. What does Shvei Kesef mean? Money equivalent. How come that means property over here? It means real estate or real assets? Because the meaning of Shvei Kesef is means something that is worth any money. What the Gemara says here, my new. What is worth any amount of money? Davar she'en lo ona'ah. Something that does not have ona'ah, overcharging for it. Ona'ah is the Torah's requirement that you do not under or overcharge a person by roughly 20%. If you're within those bounds, that's considered to be a normal sewer error. If you're already at that bound or beyond, it's a overcharge. It's an isu d'oraita to charge someone so much or to buy something at below that price. That's only true by metaltalin, which have a given price. Karka, the Gemara says, ain lo ona'ah. Karka has no ona'ah. That is a machloket rishonim, what that means. I've mentioned this before. The Balei HaTosafot say it over here. The Balei HaTosafot, as well as many of the rishonim, believe, based on Yerushalmi, that's only up to 50%. And at two times its value or half its value, there is no ona'ah. Beyond that, there is ona'ah. Rashi, the Rif, and many of the other very early rishonim and goanim believe that ain ona'ah l'korot means literally. There is no ona'ah l'karkot. No matter what the price is, there is no ona'ah l'karkot. But in either case, what we're saying here is that shvei kesef, it's worth any money. That's what it means. Not that it's a money equivalent, but it's worth any money because no matter what price is charged, that is the price for the land. It's the location and the eye of the beholder, and therefore property has different values to different people, and you can't mark a fixed value on the property. And that's why when we say here the word shvei kesef, it means real estate or real property. So where it says then, avadim ushtarod nami, ein lahem ona'ah. Avadim ushtarod also don't have ona'ah. So if you're saying shvei kesef works over here, that means anything that is worth any money, or in essence, anything that doesn't have ona'ah associated with it, then real estate or real property is not the only item that's included there. Avadim ushtarod also don't have ona'ah. Since they don't have ona'ah, they should also be included in this category. Yet we're not saying that. We're only saying that zachisim sheish lemachriyut, which is real estate or real property. Things that are bought with money. Things that can be acquired through kesef. It says, abadim ushtarot, nami nikne bikesef. Not only can land be bought with kesef, as we saw in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, that one of the vehicles for acquisition of land is kesef. The Gemara says, well, avadim and shtarot have that same din that they're nicknamed bekesef, which, as you know, first of all, avadim are nicknamed bekesef, that we know from the Mishnah in Kiddushin. Shtarot, that they're nicknamed bekesef, Rashi says over here, shtarot, the nickname bekesef, loit preish hecha. I have no idea where in Shas that is said. I have no idea where the Gemara ever says that you can buy a shtar through kesef. Balei HaTosafot are so bothered by that. Flo Garcin and Shtarot. They take out the word Shtarot because there's no din of Kesef by Shtarot that you can acquire through Kesef. Uber star. The only way you can buy another star is either through giving over the star physically or another star that indicates that you have this star. And even by chalipin, it's not even clear that you can do that by a star, whether it works. So kesef certainly is not a vehicle for acquiring the star. Rashi's not knowing where it is leads Tosfot to take out the girsa. There is an alternate girsa that writes here, avadim ushfachot, instead of avadim ushtarot, and that would obviously make sense because shfachot are the same din as avadim, and it's a small difference between them. But be that as it may, there are other things that are nicknamed derek kesef, so it doesn't solve your problem. El amar Rashi, shvei kesef, velo kesef. It has to be something that has money equivalents, but it is not money. Vani kulu kesef ninu. Everything else is basically, I would call it, mobile stored value. Land is the only fixed or stationary stored value. Property is different than all these other items because all these other items, you can carry the value to wherever you want to utilize it or to wherever you want to monetize it. So therefore, they are deemed to be like kesef, cash and cash equivalent, because you can take them anywhere you want. Land is different because it is shvei kesef, it is worth money, but it is not kesef. It's not a mobile stored value. It simply is shvei kesef. It is worth money. It has stored value, but it cannot be taken to where you need it. The Ramilei Rav Yehuda Bar Chinina, the Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Yeshua, Tana shvei kesef. So based on our mission now, it says that the Beit Din only deals with shvei kesef. The Beit Din only deals with real property or real estate, land. That's it. Vatanyo. What about the braita that we dealt with all the way till now? Yeshiv the rabot shvei kesef. That when it says yeshiv, it says you can give in payment anything that has money equivalent or value. Vafilu subin, even from the worst of your grain or from the bran of your grain. Hachemaskinan biyatme. What are we dealing with here? We're dealing with yitomim over here. So biyatme, you only have a right to collect out of land, because we mentioned before that when a parent has obligations to other parties and then passes away, when the estate then moves to the yitomim, the only thing encumbered to all these obligations is the real estate, because the real estate stays and doesn't disappear, number one. Number two is the metaltalin. We can't tell whether the metaltalin came from the estate or the metaltalin were purchased by the yitomim. We don't know what belongs to them and what belongs to the estate. It's very hard to differentiate. By land, it's clear who had the land and how the title moved to the yitomim. Therefore, we only collect out of land. So what the suggestion here is we're dealing with yitomim. In that instance, Beit Din will only go after real property. It will not go after metaltalin. Ibiatme, if we're talking about yitomim here, ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter part of that braita that says, im kadam nizak v'tafas metaltalin, Beit Din govin lo behen. The guy jumped the gun and grabbed the metaltalin, Beit Din helps him or allows that to go in lieu of the payment of the damage that's done. Well, ibiatme, am I Beit Din govin lo behen? If these are yitomim, Beit Din's not going to be a party to this, where you're taking metaltalin, which you're not entitled to. You're taking metaltalin from yitomim, which are not encumbered to the obligation over here. So the fact that you jumped the gun and ran and grabbed them for the yitomim, we're not going to endorse that type of behavior. Beit Din will force you to give it back. So why are we saying here that Beit Din basically approves of what you've done? Like Rav Nachman says that he took the metaltalin while the parent was still alive. While the father was still alive, he grabbed the metaltalin. Now, Hanami, so too in our case here, shetafas michayim. It's a time when he grabbed it before the father passed away. So since he grabbed the metaltalin while the father was still alive, he took the metaltalin in a time when Beit Din would accept metaltalin as a form of payment, and therefore they are willing to approve or endorse the metaltalin as being for payment over here. If he took it after the death of the father and he went after the estate, Beit Din would make him disgorge it and give it back to the Tomim, because he has no right to take it in that case. So now, so far, we've explained the two first lines of the Mishnah, which is Shum Kesef and Shvei Kesef. Now the Gemara moves on to the next piece, which is Bifnei Beit Din. It must be done before a Beit Din. Prat, the Mocher Nechasav, V'achar Kach Holech, the Beit Din. So exclude a case where a guy basically sells all of his property off, and then goes to Beit Din. He says, listen, I owe all this money. I'm not going to be able to pay off all this money. He basically liquidates all of his assets, sells all of his property, and then ends up in Beit Din. Now the creditors want the property back because the property is encumbered to them. So they go to Beit Din to get the property back. What we're suggesting over here is that we do not intercede on behalf of the creditors. Where it says, and this is the way Rashi reads it, Shmamina, love umachar nechasav, achakach bal beitin, epintin, govin omen. You're suggesting now that the conclusion is that if a person borrows money, and the creditors want their money back, and the guy goes and sells off all his property, that the creditors are out of luck? Isn't that the whole point of an encumbrance? That the fact is that they can go after this land even if he sells it? And that they have a first right to collect on this land? How could you come up now and make a case where they don't have rights to go get what they are duly owed? Ella, prat the beitin hejotot. Comes to exclude a beitin of lay people. Meaning that you need mumchim over here and not hejotot. Now even that is not so clear. You can see that in Rashi. Rashi says, "Lahachi atam adnitin beitin mumchin danin dinei knasot, v'lo beitin hejotot." A beitin of mumchin is needed in cases of knasot, of fines, and therefore you need a beitin of mumchin over here. Why is that so clear? Who says we're talking about knas over here? There's no indication that the Mishnah is talking about knas, and we talked about the arba avot nezikin. The arba avot nezikin are mamona. So why would you say that you need a beitin shel mumchin? So the way that the Rishonim deal with this, either to say that Tosfot says over here, Avagav the matintan lo ayir b'knasot, the manda amar tana shor l'raglo maved l'shino, mikom akom remez lanu atana matintan afilu b'meli d'lo ayir b'resha. The tana here is hinting to us things that are not mentioned in the Arvot v'zikin, which is certain times there are knasot, and those knasot you require a beitin shel mumchin. According to Rav, who says that one of the Arvot v'zikin is Karen, then it's easier to understand, because we're going to see Chatzin as a Karen. It's machloka whether it's knas or mamon, but according to one who says it's knas, at least then you can explain what the Mishnah you need mumchim for is because it mentioned keren, which is something that requires, or something that is a knas. So that's why it says, prat the beitin shel hejotot, to deal with the issues of knas, whether they are real, or whether they are possibly to come up, and you need to know that you need mumchim then and not hejotot. That's the way Rashi reads the Gemara. Bali et Tosafot do not accept Rashi's explanation, for a very simple reason, which is the reading of the Gemara, the way I read it, is very strange. It tells you something, and then right away questions what they said or what the conclusion was. And what was the Havamina anyway? What, they sells off his property and not going to be able to go after the encumbrance. So the Bali et Tosafot said that this Gemara is asking or trying to deal with a very fundamental or more fundamental question, which is that, is Shibuda Midoraita or only Midorabanan? The right to an encumbrance of a property when you lend money, is that a right min a Torah? Or is that only a right min the Rabbanan? I mean, does the Torah, when you lend money to the other party, now recognize that he owes you money? And therefore you have a Torah encumbrance on that property? That might have to do whether a Davar Shekatuba Torah is Kishtar Dami, it's like as if you have a star on it, or not. Or is it only an institution, the Rabbanan, to protect lenders and to keep the market liquid? So that's one possibility. And you can ask the same question by Nezakin as well. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says, Mefresh Rabbeinu Tam, Shema Mina, Love Umachar Nechazav, Ein Beitin Govin Lemehen Min HaTorah, Deshibuda Lav Doraita. What the Gemara is saying is not a question or bitmiah like Rashi, but rather Shema Mina. Let us conclude from this that Shibuda is not Min HaTorah. Because what you're telling me now in the Mishnah is that if you go ahead and borrow money, then sell off all your property and come to Beitin, Beitin says, we can't do anything. There are no rights here because min haTorah, there is no encumbrance, there is no shibud on the property for the creditor. Oh, Beit Din does intervene. Why does Beit Din intervene? That is a takanat chachamim, which was to lo tinol delet bifnei alavin, not to shut down the loan market. Because if you don't allow them to gain collateral here, they're going to shut down the loan market. And the hochi, bin izakin nami lo gave, the mil v'shtar dafka tikun rabbanan to the gave mimishavte mishum nila delet. And therefore, the distinction we made here is that we're talking about nezek over here. Nezek is different than borrowing. And that's what the Gemara's conclusion is. Since Shibuda is not min haTorah, that means that both by loans and by nezek, you have no rights to go after the property if he sold it. But the Chachamim intervened and said by loans you can go after the property, by nezek you can't go after the property. Why is there that distinction? Because by loans, we want to keep the market liquid for loans. So therefore the Chachamim intervened and said, even though midoraita, you don't have a right, we're going to give you a right in order that we keep the market open. By Nizakin, where it's less shkiach, it's not as common, it's not a big issue, there the Chachamim did not intervene in the market. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. Shma mina. Here's your conclusion. Shibuda is labdoraita, and that's why you can't go after this property that he sold, because there is no shibuda doraita, and here there's no reason for a takana, and that's why you're out of luck if he sold his property after doing nezek. Right, so that's a different reading of the Gemara, but makes it a much more fundamental discussion of the Gemara as to what is the driving force behind the right to go and collect property when you lend someone money or when you have nezek, whether that's a din d'oraita or a din d'rabbanan. The Gemara's conclusion here is that it's a din d'rabbanan, and therefore it only has application by loans where the chachamim intervene, not by nezekim where the chachamim did not intervene. Okay, al pi edim, the next line in the Mishnah, prat l'modeh b'knas v'achakach ba'u edim. That comes to exclude a case where the person admitted in a case of a fine, where he is patur, and then edim came anyway and testified against him, that he is patur. We know that there's a principle that a person, modeh b'knas, is patur. Someone admits to something that would otherwise result in a fine, there we do not fine him. He's patur from the fine. So now, if edim come after the fact and say that he is chayav, we didn't need his admission anymore. So it's a machloket as to when the edim come afterwards, whether you are now chayav, because we didn't need your admission, or you're still patur, because your admission preceded the edim that came. So what the Gemara is saying here is, prat modeh b'knas v'chakach ba'u edim. Our case is a case of pi edim. Only if the edim show up first are you going to be chayav for the knas. But if the edim show up after you already admitted, then you will not be chayav for the knas, you'll be patur for the knas. That's what our Mishnah is telling us. It says, that works well for the one who has such an opinion. What can you say over here? How do you explain over here the Mishnah's Prat Eidim? Because as far as Modeh B'Knas, if Eidim show up afterwards, you are going to be Chayav in that Knas. You're not going to be exempted just because you admitted it. The Eidim come and change the dynamic. Rav Soloveitchik over here says that the Machloket in Modeh B'Knas might revolve around the issue of why you're patur by Modeh B'Knas. Is Modeh B'Knas patur because you've taken away the obligation? The chiyuv is now gone because your admission eliminates the obligation completely. Therefore, if edim show up afterwards, there's nothing to obligate you with because the need for payment is gone. Or do we say that Modeh B'Knas is patur is because, or based on the principle of hodat baldin kamei edim dami. And so since he already admits it, and there's an exemption because of hodat baldin kamei edim, therefore we give you an exemption in this case. That does not mean the chiyuv is gone.
So if you view it as hodat baldin kamei edim dami, then there's a difference between mamon and nefashot. In cases of mamon, then you don't need edut anymore because hodat baldin kamei edim is koveya, the reality in that case. On the other hand, in dinei nefashot, then the hodat baldin is not worth anything in terms of edut or establishing the case. Therefore, if edim come along, those edim can establish the facts and make him obligated in that case.
Therefore, if other edim show up and now make you chayav, then we have a different set of edim that are obligating you. So your edut may not obligate yourself, but someone else's edut could obligate yourself, and that's why Modeh B'Knas might be chayav, and that might explain the difference in these opinions. Where it says, Seifa Yitzrichale, Enoch Hanami, according to the one who says that Modeh B'Knas, V'achakach Ba'edim chayav, you don't need this statement here, but you need the remainder, which is Bnei Chorin u'Bnei Berit, that you need that the Edim must be free people, and they must be a part of the covenant. Bnei Chorin, the Meute Abadim. Bnei Chorin comes to exclude people who are slaves. They may not be Edim. Bnei Berit, the Meute Obdei Kuchavim. And that they are part of the covenant means comes to exclude someone who is not a part of the covenant. An Obdei Kuchavim would exclude in that case. V'tzricha. And I need to exclude both of them. Diashminan Eved, if you only told me that an Eved is not ruoy to testify in these cases, Mishum Dein Lo Yachas, because he has no lineage that is associated with him. We saw that before. Am Adomel Chamor, Eved Knani, Eshivcha Knani, to have no Dina in Yichus. About Nachri, Deyesho Yachas, the Nachri who does have Yichus, and we learned that in the Gemara in Yevamot, where we have the assignment of a child to the father in the name. We say, Ben this, Ben that. And we show you that there is ichus between parents and child with regards to a nachri. Aim alo. Maybe they should be able to testify. That's why I need the other one. Biashmein a nachri. If you told me that the nachri, the non-Jews excluded mishum to lo shayach be mitzvot. Because he has no relevance in the covenant whatsoever. He doesn't have any mitzvot that he must do. Aval eved, the shayach be mitzvot, aim alo. But an eved who does have relevance by the mitzvot, he's chayav in mitzvot ki isha. Maybe he would be entitled to testify. Tzricha. That's why I need both miyutim over here. Both the miyut of Bnei Chorin and Bnei Berit. The teaches both Eved and Ovid Kuchavim are excluded. As far as the word Edim is concerned for the Modeh B'Knas, who says when Edim come afterwards, you're Chayav, the word Edim itself is not important.
Edim is the modification, the qualification of Edim, that they're Bnei Churim, Bnei Brit. That's what's important. So the Edim leads into that, but in and of itself, it's not significant. You don't have to come up with something special for that. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Tedvav Amud Aleph.